Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Everyone, and welcome to episode 439 of the Battery Power Podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland, coming to you on a Sunday here in early to mid-March, and I'm joined, as I always am, by Scott Coleman. And Scott, you just watched the Oscars. It's that time of year. March Madness is coming, and we're talking about baseball. It's beautiful, isn't it?
Hey, Brad. It is a great time of year. We are 17 days away from opening day. I don't know about you. Usually I feel like spring training kind of slogs along and takes forever, but this year it seems like it's moving by pretty quickly. And about 2 weeks from when people will be listening to this podcast, the Braves will be breaking camp and heading to Philadelphia for opening day. So we are getting closer and closer.
Yeah. So we're recording this late evening on Sunday, but as people listen to this probably on Monday, we're kind of almost getting there. This is going to be our final position preview. So if you missed it, we've already talked in depth about the bullpen, the infield, the outfield on different podcasts, also just miscellaneous things along the way. So please catch up on all of that stuff. Please subscribe to this podcast. And by the way, you get more than just Scott and I. You also get two other shows within a show, basically. The Daily Hammer, hosted by Sean Coleman, on a regular, more bite-sized basis on the latest news and things. And then also the podcast Be Named Later with Stephen Tolbert and Chris Willis. I think Sean was the guest host on that one this week, but all of that is available for you, and we really would appreciate it if you would subscribe and share the podcast with your close friends and family. But before we dive into what's going to be the preview section, which is going to be on the focus on the rotation on the show, a little bit of news, nothing crazy, Scott, but like some roster stuff, some guys sent to the minor league camp is kind of the biggest thing. They still have some position battles going on, but it feels like a couple of the, I don't know if they're even battles, but a couple of the procedural things have kind of come down the last few days, I guess, namely with the bullpen as bench shuffling. Daisbell Hernandez, Ray Kerr, and Ken Giles are now all off of the current big league roster. That doesn't necessarily clarify too much, but there has been some real buzz on all three of those guys at different times. So what did you make of all of that and what it might tell us? Because we're going to kind of hold off on the final predictions or analysis on the roster until later on in March, but we're kind of getting there, and those are three guys who had a real chance, it seemed like.
Yeah, I think what we have seen through a couple of appearances from Ken Giles has been really exciting. And I know that some folks were a little bummed and maybe surprised that Giles was sent down to minor league camp. But I think from the Braves' perspective, and you have to keep in mind that Giles really has not pitched in the major leagues since 2019. I mean, that's 5 years ago. He has had a plethora of injuries since then. And I mean, just so much time has passed. I mean, we're talking pre-COVID season. We're talking 2019 Josh Donaldson at third base for the Braves. We're talking Dallas Keuchel starting game one of the NLDS for some unknown reason for the Braves. So obviously a lot of time has passed since then, but I think for Giles, it'll be an opportunity for him to get some back-to-backs in, really build up his strength, and hopefully stay healthy for the long haul. Because even if he isn't necessarily around in April, it would be great to have him over the summer months and deep into the playoff stretch. And then for guys like Ray Kerr and Daisbell Hernandez, both, of course, really good stuff. They are cursed in a way that they have minor league options. Brian Snitker has talked that sometimes the worst thing a player can have is minor league eligibility, and both of those guys have it. So if you're telling me at some point this season that we hear from Daisbell and Ray and from Ken, I would believe it. It's a numbers game, and whenever you have a deep bullpen like this, it's tough to find room for everybody.
Yes, and I think this is pretty common knowledge, but bullpens turn over a ton during the season. Like, you're not going to go with the same 8-9 guys the entire way. It's just not going to happen. So between injuries and ineffectiveness or whatever, and it's a great point you're making, because if you have options, sometimes other guys don't. You know, for instance, we all love Tyler Matzik. Tyler Matzik doesn't have options, and he has some left side soreness right now, but he seems like he's trending towards being on the team. Dylan Lee, et cetera. But like, if you're Ray Kerr, who they actively went out and traded for, like they seem to like Ray Kerr. It's just, you know, it makes it easier on the team side if you have an option to just have somewhere to put you without having to change your roster and bring you up later on. So I'm with you all the way on the Giles thing. It will not surprise me now, given what we've heard and seen in small doses, if he is a factor at some point. But it's still pretty much unknown, I would say, even if he looks good in spring, which he has. That length of time, the fact that you threw the curveball at me there with Josh Donaldson being the third baseman the last time that he was on the mound in the majors, that's all you need to know, honestly. That's a long time ago, it feels like, Scott.
Yeah, it certainly puts things in perspective. So an uphill battle for sure for Ken Giles to come all the way back. It is pretty rare for a player to miss 4 full seasons, more or less, and then make a full-on return. But once again, he was very talented once upon a time. So, you know, as we sit here in the middle of March, the Braves probably have, what, 10, 11, maybe even 12 bullpen options who I think they would feel pretty comfortable on the active roster at any given point. I mean, that's really valuable to have because, as you just said, there's going to be turnover and guys are going to get injured. Guys are going to underperform. Guys are going to need a breather. We know there's going to be a carousel of sorts, and it's really a good thing to have all this depth accumulated here in March.
Absolutely. And the other kind of, you know, battle happening is in the outfield that's had some clarity, at least some clarity. JP Martinez was optioned. Speaking of options, he has them, who they actively went out and got this winter as well. You still have Forrest Wall, Eli White, Jordan Luplo kind of battling in the outfield, and I would also throw in the potential of a external addition as camp gets later and later, guys become available, and I could see the Braves pouncing on someone who is available somewhere else because they don't have the guy that anybody's in love with as their fourth outfielder right now. So I would just make that a possibility. But at any rate, you know, Martinez is the only one that's been optioned so far. And if you ask a different person or if you read a different roster preview from one of the beat guys or whatever, they all seem to be kind of similar, but also split in particular on the way that backup unit might look. I mean, basically the only guy that I have seen on the bench that's been projected in everyone's predictions is Guillorme. Everything else is essentially somewhat up for grabs from Fletcher to the outfielders.
It really does feel like there are a couple of bench spots here that are up for grabs. And it's kind of fun and exciting to keep an eye on just because there's just not a whole lot of other openings on this roster. If the Braves had 3 spots in the starting lineup up for grabs, then obviously we would be focusing on that.
And they do not, and, by the way.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Barry is locked in as a roster can possibly be, other than maybe the last bullpen spot and then a couple of bench spots. And with the DH, you know, you're probably not going to have to rely on them a ton. So it'll be an interesting battle over these last 2 weeks. And, you know, there are still quite a few very capable free agents out there at this point who could be added. There's also going to be roster cuts. So we'll see if the Braves pounce on anybody externally or if they just roll with probably 2 of Forrest Wall, Eli White, and Jordan Luplo to begin the year. Yeah, and good news, I guess we should at least, while we're talking news, last time, Brad, when we recorded this podcast, we were a little nervous about Ronald Acuña Jr.
Agreed.
If you happen to somehow miss, he has a clean bill of health, which is very, very good. So, you know, even less so, we talked a week ago, if something were to happen to Acuña or any of the outfielders this spring, they, you know, we felt pretty strongly they would have to go out and add somebody. But because so far, knock on wood, a clean bill of health for all 3, I would imagine they're going to just see what they have with these options and go from there.
Yeah, if you somehow get your Braves news exclusively from only this version of the podcast, because I know that we've had other shows on the network, but if you only listen to Scott and I and nothing else in the world, you wouldn't know about Ronnie. But now you do. Thank you for doing that, Scott, because I would have forgotten that we didn't cover that last time.
Big old exhale. Thank goodness nothing was wrong with that knee, because, man, that would have been just a gigantic bummer.
Yeah, we talked about Eddie Rosario and like Adam Duvall. By the way, Eddie Rosario signed with the Nationals, so he's off the board. But hey, Adam Duvall, I believe, is still available as of this moment. So if the Braves want to sign Adam Duvall, I would still support that. I'll just say that right now. If they want to sign Adam Duvall tomorrow, I will embrace that decision.
Adam Duvall, who has maybe the biggest swing in Braves history that nobody is going to remember in like 10 years. The grand slam in game five of the World Series to put Atlanta up 4-0. I was getting texts left and right. The Braves were going to win the World Series. And of course, we know how the rest of that game went after Duvall's grand slam. Very thankfully, the Braves bounced back in game six and won it all. But
yeah. That was a weird night for us. I gotta say, that was a weird.
We were
the fear set in a big way,
circling the wagons and getting the champagne ready. And then that first inning was incredible, and then that game, very sadly, went downhill from there. But nonetheless, we are pro Adam Duvall and have been for a long time. Maybe he ends up back in Atlanta at some point.
Yeah. Other than that, I guess the only thing is they did send Hurston Waldrop now, who we'll talk about later on this podcast, as he's part of the rotation mix. He obviously has sky high upside, and I think nobody was really banking on him making the team out of camp. He's still, of course, he's a first round pick very recently, but he could appear later on. So we'll come back to him later on in the show. I guess without any further delay, Scott, we can talk about the rotation unless you have other things to drop. I mean, we can talk Arizona basketball if you want to.
We will do, because I know that everyone is waiting on pins and needles for Brad's and I's bonus podcast of the NCAA tournament and our thoughts on the bracket. That will be coming at some point next week.
Hopefully.
I know everyone is waiting, no, like 8 people probably, but we will do it because Brad and I love this time of year. But yeah, let's get on into this rotation.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity, but giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, let's talk about the rotation. And Spencer Strider is at the top of the heap here. We kind of know, just as a spoiler, I guess, big picture, the Braves essentially have 4 guys that are completely locked in, and then a battle for the 5th spot of some degree. But we'll start at the top with Strider. He was one of the best pitchers in the league last year, top 5 in Cy Young voting, led the league in strikeouts, and in FIP, had great peripherals, had kind of an unlucky ERA. But I have a stat for you, Scott, to talk about how good Spencer has been. He became a starter in June of 2022. On this show, we were pretty early on, like, the why isn't he starting bandwagon? Like, what is going on? Why is he still in the bullpen? This is almost 2 years ago now, but it was kind of a funny conversation. But he became a starter full time, and since then, that's, you know, again, almost 2 years, he has the most Fangraphs WAR of any starting pitcher in baseball. So one could argue he has been the best starter in baseball since the moment he became a starter. Number one, strikeouts, top of the heap in FIP and xFIP and strikeout rate and all that stuff. Like, he is, if he hasn't been the best guy, he's certainly been in the top five for 2 years. And that's pretty amazing given, like, what he was supposed to be. Like, everyone knew his stuff was going to be fantastic, but, like, he was essentially a 2-pitch guy. And, like, it was like, all right, is he going to be a reliever? There was all kinds of talk about this. And from the moment he was a starter, he has been a superstar, like an actual superstar.
Yeah. And on last week's outfield preview, we talked a little bit about Michael Harris and how the Braves were wizards with just churning out these franchise stars, players who they can build around. And in some ways, I was just thinking about Spencer Strider's ascension to having a claim for best pitcher in baseball, at very worst, top three or top five. But again, man, in 2020, he was a fourth round pick out of Clemson. And you just said it, he was expected to be more of like the reliever type. He had had Tommy John. I mean, he was on no one's radar. It wasn't like Spencer was like a top 10 consensus prospect. He was someone who threw hard and had an interesting mix of pitches, but wasn't like this guy was anointed the next super mega arm in Major League Baseball. And I mean, you know, we're coming up on 2024 season now. I mean, we're talking like 4 years ago. This guy was a fairly unheralded fourth round pick in a five round draft at that. And now we're talking about him like he might have a real claim to being the best pitcher on planet Earth. I mean, just a crazy meteoric rise for Spencer Strider.
Yeah. And look, it's a preview. We're talking about these guys, and like, it's important to just point out he's awesome. There isn't a ton to talk about as far as like how good he is. The one thing that is interesting with Strider, whereas like, we'll get into Max Fried, the thing there has been his durability, etc. With Spencer, it seems like he's actually might change his arsenal this year. Like, he seems to be pretty open about that. He was essentially a two and a half pitch guy, like mostly fastball slider almost to this point. Like, it's kind of always been occasionally a changeup, but he has this curveball that he has now been talking about and also throwing a lot. And on one hand, it makes sense that he would throw it a lot in the spring when nothing matters and you can tinker with it. At the same time, he's been really good in the spring. And granted, it's the spring, so I don't really care that much about his stats in the spring, especially a guy who's established. But this might be a real thing, it seems like. I mean, by all accounts, he might just be a guy who throws a real curveball now. And I don't know what that's going to mean. It's kind of terrifying. If it's a good curveball, I don't know how you're supposed to hit this guy. But even if it's an average pitch, it would almost certainly help him because it's another weapon he can offer.
You know, it's always been interesting with Spencer because you mentioned he throws his fastball and the slider almost exclusively. And then he would occasionally work in a changeup. And the changeup is pretty good, I think. And I don't know if you feel differently, but anytime he throws the changeup, it feels like it has good action to it, has good movement, keeps left-handed hitters more balanced, and they can't just sit on a fastball. But Spencer never seems to really trust that changeup a ton. So it makes total sense that, man, it's a lot easier said than done. But if he can just work a curveball in and balance it with his fastball and his slider and maybe even an occasional changeup against lefties, I mean, that's just something that, A, pitchers just cannot do very often in the major leagues. Just, sure, let's throw in a curveball to my mix when you already throw an upper 90s fastball and a wipeout slider. But in B, I mean, you talk about a guy who seemingly is getting better, which is crazy to think when we just listed off his numbers, career 2.5 FIP across 51 starts, the absurd strikeout and walk numbers. I mean, really the one thing that has kind of held him back a little bit, I think in the eyes of maybe a national perspective, is just his ERA is a little high, but some of that too has just been unlucky and fluky with batting average on balls in play and things like that. So if you're telling me that Spencer's going to add a good third pitch to his mix, I mean, it's over. It's just, just a special player, and we'll see how much he uses it. I'm imagining that Spencer is going to start opening day in Philadelphia. I'm curious that when the lights are on and the games matter, how many times he's going to throw that curveball. But if it's really a third pitch for him and he's going to throw it regularly and he trusts it, then I mean, game on, because it's going to be fascinating to see what it does for him overall.
Yeah, I totally agree. And just to add to your point about the changeup, I'm looking at a Statcast profile. His changeup, granted, it's a tiny sample size. He's thrown it like 225 times last year, which is still, you know, a decent amount. 7% of his pitches were changeups. This is Statcast, but his numbers were actually absurdly good with the changeup. Like, he allowed a 184 slugging percentage with the changeup last year.
I don't know how you can possibly hit it, right? Like, unless you are incredibly lucky as a hitter and you're thinking, maybe he's going to throw me a changeup here. I mean, you're geared up for 99 or a fastball or a slider that's going to be off the plate and then end up at your ankles. I mean, what are you supposed to do with that changeup? I mean, you apparently can't do anything against
it. Yeah, apparently nothing. Apparently just pray that he misses with it. I don't know. So anyway, if he's suddenly a three and a half pitch pitcher instead of a four, instead of a two and a half pitch pitcher, that'd be very helpful. But look, just to say it again plainly, he doesn't even need to do this. It's just that he's all the more terrifying. And yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the ERA. For every time we would mention how good Strider was last year, there's always this, and we're not gonna do the whole thing now, but there's always the ERA is all that matters contingent, and we don't really subscribe to that. But even if you look at his ERA, he still had a good ERA. It's just that it wasn't as good as the rest of his numbers. But I'm a firm believer that peripherals a little bit tell you more about the pitcher. And the previous season in 2022, he had a 2.67 ERA for the year. So if you care about ERA, he still has a low threes ERA in his MLB career, and even better as a starter. So I wouldn't worry too much.
So let me ask you this, Brad, because you are a betting man. You do enjoy the sports books. Would you take Spencer Strider and Max Fried, or even Chris Sale? We'll go one more. That wow. Trio as National League Cy Young winner or the field. Who are you taking?
The field, I think. I don't think Chris Sale is going to win. I would love if Chris Sale found the fountain of youth and threw 32 starts. And
you know, I was going to say the only path for Sale, and I threw him in there just for kicks and giggles to balance it a little bit. I mean, if Sale made 30 starts, I'd be interested to see. But you know, Fried, and we'll get to Max in a minute, but I almost feel like Max is now underrated because of the injuries last year and the not great playoff appearance just because he was so rusty. I mean, he was second to Sandy Alcantara in Cy Young voting like 18 months ago. And I feel like that's maybe not lost on everyone, but I feel like for some fans, he's kind of been underrated a bit or forgotten about just how damn good Max Fried is when he's healthy.
Oh, absolutely. Let's get into that now even. But yeah, to answer your question, I suppose I would take the field, but I wouldn't love it. You know what I mean? I think that the Braves have two legitimate Cy Young candidates. I'm agreeing with your premise too on Fried kind of being forgotten because he's been, as we'll get into right now, really, really good whenever he's been healthy. He made 14 starts last year due to a couple of different issues. The blister is the one that's persisting, but he had an elbow thing, a hamstring thing, etc. He was more durable than people remember before that. I think he's almost got this like injury label now, but I don't really think that's true. He kind of threw pretty clearly full season workloads in four straight years before last year. 2020 was not a full year for anybody, but he had 11 starts that year. That was a full workload that year. And you mentioned him being underrated. Another fun stat on the Max Fried front. Again, not that we just said that ERA isn't everything, and I agree with that, but last 4 years, Scott, I pulled this number too. Guess who has the best ERA in baseball among starting pitchers in the last four seasons combined? His name is Max Fried.
I was going to say, is it Max Fried?
That's pretty impressive. Like, and I didn't know that I was just doing prep for this. And I feel like we already kind of suspected he was underrated, but that's a pretty wow statistic. And he's thrown fewer innings than some guys over that span. That's part of it. But it's not a fluke. He's fourth in FIP. So it's not like he's smoking mirrors right now in the way that you would think. You know, Strider's number one in a smaller sample size in peripherals, but to be fourth in FIP is almost as impressive as being number one in ERA. That means like you're not faking it. He's essentially always been good when healthy, and not to the extreme of Chris Sale, who we'll talk about in a second. But I feel like if you could guarantee me 28 starts of Max Fried, he's an all-star for sure at that level, and would be certainly a top 10 Cy Young candidate only at 28 starts. If you guarantee me 32 starts, top five in the National League kind of thing. Like, he's really, really good whenever he is pitching and pitching regularly.
Yeah, I think what's just been so fun to watch with Max over his career is how he has evolved as a pitcher. And I think just he is a master of his craft, and he's talked about having different variations of each of his pitches, which is just fascinating to hear and to think about, and knowing that he has, you know, a half dozen different pitches, if you will, that he can go to at any point. And sure, they're all going to look similar as a fastball or whatever kind of pitch it's going to be, but he really has a full arsenal at his disposal whenever he's healthy and on the mound. And I think that's just kind of the one question mark as you have for Max. Only 14 starts a year ago, and he's someone who has always had a couple of just weird injuries. Let's hope, by all accounts, his elbow is fine after the real scare last year. I mean, there was a moment where, I mean, we thought it was probably Tommy John with the elbow strain. And thankfully it was not. And that would have more or less ended Max's time in Atlanta. So thank goodness that didn't happen. But for him, it is a very, very big year for Max. There are quite literally millions of reasons why Max has all of the incentive in the world to have a really great upcoming season. A pending free agent as of recording this. I suppose it is not impossible that a deal could get done before opening day. But as we have all kind of suspected for some time now, it seems like Max is going to be a free agent in about 9 months. And he certainly has a lot of reasons to go out there and have a really good season because it will make him quite a bit of money.
Yeah, and I feel like we covered it a lot for a long time and have talked about it for a little while now, but that's a good way to set the stage. Like, I think that everyone will be shocked if he is not a free agent. He could return. I think if I had to bet right now, he probably won't return based on free agency and the way the Braves have operated and all that stuff. But at the very least, they have another year with Max and high expectations for him and for the team. And he's very, very good. I don't know what the number is, but he is one of the best pitchers in baseball. For one more example of that, Zips projects him with the fifth best ERA among starters in baseball this year. He's a little bit lower in Fangraph's WAR projections because of the lower innings that he's projected for, which basically because of last year. Those systems kind of bake in a little bit of uncertainty if you don't pitch a full workload the previous year. But even with that, like, everyone agrees he's really good. It's just how good he is. And I think that he is underrated. And I'd like to just personally see, like, look, everybody likes Max too, but I like to just see him have a full season for maybe to give him a little bit of love in general. It would make him some money on top of that, which I'm sure would not be the worst thing in the world, but just some attention, because I feel like he is better than people realize he is in the end.
Yeah. And there was an interesting poll that was sent out this week, I think by MLB Network, about the best 1-2 punch in Major League Baseball. And Strider and Fried, if healthy, for my money, are pretty clearly the number one pairing in Major League Baseball. I think their upside is the highest. There are some really good 1-2 punches out there. Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola. And I forget what day the poll was posted, but I'm sure you can find it. But regardless, if the Braves can get, I don't know, 55 starts out of Strider and Fried, 60 starts would be a dream. I mean, that would be really good news for this team's long-term outlook.
Yeah, I think that the only pairing that I would think about would be the Phillies guys that you just mentioned, Wheeler and Nola, because they've been a little bit more durable. If they throw more, then they throw more innings. This is a sidebar. You and I agree that Wheeler he absolutely rocks. That guy is incredibly good. Unfortunately for Braves fans, because he's on the Phillies, but he's very, very good.
Zach Wheeler just signed a mega deal, a 3-year highest annual value ever for a pitcher.
He earned that, by the way. He's worth it. He's very
phenomenal. Good. We would have loved. I was strongly banging the drum for Zach Wheeler like 4 years ago.
We were right about that too. It didn't happen. We were right.
Now and then, Brad, we get one right.
Yeah, that was a correct take by us, but alas, it didn't happen. And the Braves won the World Series anyway. So
that's right. Fun.
Okay, we can move on from the top two guys. I think you did a good job setting the stage there. Like, they're very good. There's nothing to worry about, or that you can realistically worry about with Strider and Fried. So, rolling from there to the other guy, who is it really is all about health. So Chris Sale has been a topic all winter long on this podcast. The Braves traded for him. He's the new guy on the block. He's a former Cy Young winner. He's very, very good, essentially just like Free, but more extreme with the injuries recently. He has basically never been bad in a lengthy career. He has two seasons in his career with an ERA over 3.5, and they were not even bad seasons. They were just a little bit above that. He's been... In those years, he actually had good peripherals too. It's just that he hasn't pitched in a normal full season way in a while. He was pretty good last year in 20 starts. Prior to that, had tons of injuries. We covered this a lot over the winter. But, man, I guess other than age, because he is kind of an older guy, Chris Sale, just for reference, is 34. He'll be 35 later on this year. So that's not super old when he's standing next to Charlie Morton, but it's certainly an age there's some guys kind of regress. But I feel pretty comfortable, like, as long as he's good, as long as he's healthy, he's going to be good. It really is just a knock on wood and hope he's healthy, because nobody knows, including him. Yeah. The vibes are great, but it's like, can you stay healthy is the only question that matters.
Right. Yes, it is all about the health. is really all we can say for Sale. The good news is the stuff this spring has looked tremendous. Hey, he's still sitting mid-90s with the fastball. The slider and curveball are just filthy. He's gotten some great swing and miss in his couple of starts. And Sale has said that this is his first normal and healthy offseason and spring training for the first time in like 6 or 7 years. And I think that really means something to veteran pitchers. Charlie Morton talked about that, I think, 2 years ago when he had a couple of injuries flare up and just was never right and never felt like himself. And I think for veterans, they really just kind of need to be in their usual flow and preparation. And I think for a guy like Sale, we've talked about his numbers historically. He was quite good with the Red Sox last season. He made 20 starts, got off to kind of a slow start. But after that, he had a 3.16 ERA with a 5-1 strikeout to walk ratio over his last 15 starts. So again, an ERA just above 3 and a 5-1 strikeout to walk ratio. I mean, that is really, really good. And if you're going to get a mostly healthy Chris Sale as your number 3 in rotation, I mean, again, if there's no guarantees with starting pitching. Sale has a long injury list. Charlie Morton is 40 years old. Max Fried is coming off an injury-riddled year. And really, any pitcher can have something go wrong at any point. But if you're going to get a healthy Chris Sale for most of the season as your number 3 starter, I mean, just the Braves are going to be in really good hands if that's the case.
Yeah, he's looked good in the spring for what that is worth across 3 outings so far. The projections all really like Chris Sale. They're kind of saying what we're saying. Like, there's every reason to believe that if he is pitching, he's going to be good. He's projected for about 2 wins by Zips, but only because he's only throwing 91 innings in those projections. Steamer has him with a more normal workload, has him as a 3-1 pitcher. If he's a 3-1 pitcher, that isn't like the sexiest thing in the world, but that would be totally fine. That'd be actually pretty good, pretty darn good for a third starter. And upside beyond that, I mean, it sounds crazy to mention what we said earlier about Sale, but it's kind of the same. If you could tell me he's going to throw 29, 30 starts, he really might be an all-star. Like, that's the kind of guy you're talking about. I'm not saying he's going to be, but that is a realistic thing to say out loud because of what we referenced before. Like, he's been really good at all times when he has been healthy and on the mound, including last year. And, you know, this the actual upside, just to say it, like, it's been a while, but he had a 3 or 4 year run with the White Sox and the Red Sox in which he was arguably a top 3 pitcher in baseball. Like, he was incredible for 3 or 4 years, five years in that stretch. So that guy might be gone. He is a lot older now with a lot of injuries. I'm looking at his Fangraphs even right now. He had 7 straight years with at least 4.7 Fangraphs WAR. That's a lot, man.
Yeah. Oh, he was phenomenal and had some legendary postseason appearances mixed in there with the Red Sox. He was on the mound in the 9th inning as they clinched and beat the Dodgers a handful of years ago. So this guy is a veteran. He's battle-tested. And we talked about some of his quotes earlier in the spring about how he wants the baseball and he wants to help the team however he can. And I think that is an edge and a mindset and a personality that you need in a clubhouse. And I think sometimes the clubhouse stuff and the clubhouse dynamics gets overblown. It's something for media to talk about. It's something for fans to talk about. But you need dudes like that in a clubhouse to keep everybody on the straight and narrow over 162 and then the playoffs. I mean, if there's one knock on this organization over the last 6 years of winning the division, it has been the lack of playoff success other than the World Series run. You know, I know the 2020 run to the NLCS, but that was just such a weird season. I kind of toss it out in my head, but you know, that the one knock 2018, 2019, 2022, 2023 first round exits. You know, I'm not going to pretend that if the Braves had a bunch of hard asses in the clubhouse that they would have won instead of lost, but I do really like what Sale brings and just kind of that mindset and mentality of win or else.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about this a lot, but there's that fine line between would anybody care about this if they were just winning? You know what I mean? It's like, it's the chicken or the egg thing. Like, I'm very skeptical of the narrative stuff sometimes, but also it can be true. So it's that we'll never really know, but certainly I think the team, at least in their sentiments that they've been sharing publicly or even behind the scenes, the stuff that I've heard, like, they're excited about Sale in part because he has that kind of killer mentality that they I'm not saying they've lacked it, but it helps to have a couple guys in your locker room that are just like, not necessarily like maniacs, but like really, really fiery competitors. And yeah. I think he is one of those guys.
Yes. Competitor is a great way to put it. He is a competitor first and foremost.
Yeah. So look, there's a lot of art and there's a lot of art there compared to science, but between him being a good pitcher and him having a little bit of edge to him and being a leader and someone who's seen a lot of things and was very respected in the clubhouse, that's a good addition that we're excited about. And hopefully he's pitching and is healthy. Cause again, I'm you can't hear me, folks, but I am knocking on my wood desk right now. I'm just, yes. That's all I can do.
Let's hope for a healthy year from Sale. And, you know, it's worth mentioning. I know some folks don't tune in and day out of the off season, but the Braves did guarantee a second year of contract control to Sale.
So yeah, they changed that deal and gave him, it's a little bit of extra team control, but they give up some of their downside risk. They took out a little bit more risk, basically.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
2 years fully guaranteed under contract is Chris Sale with the Atlanta Braves, and then an option for 2026. So they're going to need him to be healthy. I am curious, and then we'll to put a bow on this. I am curious to see how the Braves handle Sale's workload. If they start, I mean, if he's healthy, I think you have to keep putting him out there every fifth day or so. But, you know, do they start skipping starts? Do they limit innings early on? Do they limit his pitch count? You know, I don't know. I'm curious to see what they do. We'll have a pretty good idea in about 3 weeks from now. But that is something I am keeping an eye on, to be sure.
Yeah, good call. And I will be surprised, not only because of the injuries, but because of the age and what you just said. They haven't some incentive to monitor him. If he throws, you know, 180 innings, I'll be pretty surprised. I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but they might, even in games, I could see them having him on a pretty significant pitch count restriction, especially early in the year, just trying to keep him on the rails, keep him out there, six innings, five innings, whatever. I don't know. Maybe they'll just let him go, but I think that they it wouldn't be the worst idea to kind of manage him actively, yeah. Especially in April and May.
There are ways to be smart, right? Yes. If it's a 1-1 game in Sale, you're debating going out for the seventh inning against the Dodgers, then sure, keep him out there. If it's a 9-1 game against the Colorado Rockies in the fifth inning, you give him a pat on the back, say, great job, we got you the win, go hit the showers, and we'll see you in 5 days, right? I mean, there are ways to be smart about limiting innings without having a hard, fast rule about you will not do this or you must do that. Yeah. I think that's something they will certainly look at as the season continues.
I love that you threw in the reference to the pitcher win there, Scott. A little bit of a throwback to...
imagine it means something to guys kind of on the back nine of their careers. I don't know. Could be wrong. That's our Chip Carey section of the podcast. Shout out to Chip.
Hi, Chip.
Went to the St. Louis Cardinals, and they had their worst season in like 40 years. So, I'm sure Chip is doing well. He's closer to his family in the Midwest. So I'm sure Chip is loving life.
Absolutely loving life. Okay, let's get out of that cul-de-sac and talk about Charlie Morton. Old friend. I will raise my hand. I've been something of a Charlie Morton defender over the years. I think I've been mostly right about that to some degree. But he's 40 years old now, man. Charlie Morton is the rare professional athlete in 2024 that I cover that is older than I am. There are very few in the sports that I cover and teams that I cover. But Charlie is older than I am. He's 40 years old. He was pretty good, though, last year. Again, top 20 in the National League in Fangraphs WAR for pitchers. That may not seem like a lot, but there are 15 teams in the league, Scott. So if you're 20th in the league in 15 teams, that means you're pretty good.
Yeah.
I got to say.
I was never good at math, but that tells me there are roughly 100 starting pitchers.
75. Scott.
Get the podcast intern. Cut that segment out. 75. I'll stop talking now. You know what? You freestyle the next 10 minutes on Charlie Morton, and I'm going to just sit here and do my times tables.
The funny thing is, it's really late for me, and it's not late for Scott right now, because Scott's in Arizona. Scott's 3 hours behind me, so I have the excuse of it being late, and Scott does not. Maybe Scott's been drinking, because it's the Oscars podcast. I'm kidding.
I sadly don't have that as an excuse.
I'm joking, but... you know, if you're top 20 in the league in a 15-team league, that means you're pretty good. He was 13th in strikeouts last year for starters. That's really good. 20th in innings pitched. The one red flag was the walk rate was the highest of his career. He did miss some spots. Maybe that comes with age and not being his best possible self. But predictably, as you note here in our doc, he had the sky high home run rate in the previous year, and last year it went away because there was, it was kind of an outlier, and it felt like an outlier, and it was one, it seems like. But what do you make of how he looked last year? And I'll just say this before I throw it to you. Like, there is some level of estimation or guessing with a guy who's 40 years old, because it could go away at any point. That is the downside risk, is that a lot of guys are just cooked at 40, and Charlie was good at 39 in a way that most guys aren't. But every single day, week, month adds some more risk for a guy who's 40.
Yeah, I think the good news or the encouraging sign is that there was no obvious warning signs or red flags from Charlie's profile from a year ago. And at some time, Father Time is going to come and kick that door in. But overall, I mean, the velocity is still really good. The strikeouts were good. He was 13th in the National League in strikeouts. And he's been largely durable for his entire time with the Braves. He was 20th in innings among National League starters. And other than the unfortunate timing of the finger injury at the very end of the season, he's been someone the Braves have been able to count on for 5 or 6 or 7 innings every time he goes on the mound. So I think that the idea of having 40-year-old Charlie Morton as hopefully your fourth starter is really exciting. And even if he becomes the third starter, should an injury happen to one of those big three, I still think that's plenty fine, especially with the offense and the bullpen being what it is. So it's always a mild concern. You mentioned he's one of the very few athletes doing it into his 40s, but he is just kind of a magician out there. He keeps himself in great shape. And, he came out in spring the other day and his first pitch, I believe, was 98 miles an hour, which is pretty damn cool. So let's hope Charlie has another good season, another 30 starts in him. And, if he can be healthy for October, he's a guy who's had a long track record as well come playoff time.
One thing I just remember, and I'm not picking on this person, but I got a note from someone who isn't like, it was just, I think it's just a listener and or a reader or whatever. And they were talking about how Charlie's injury prone. And that's really not true at all. Like you mentioned the finger last year. That kind of what got me thinking about this. The timing of that was brutal, but I mean, I have it in front of me right here, Scott. The last three seasons, which are the 3 years he's been on the Braves, here are Charlie Morton's starts per season: 33, 31, and 30. If you make 30 starts a year, you are not injury prone in any way, shape, or form. Like, you're just not. So, again, the age is what it is, but that's a lot of pitches, innings, outings for a guy of any age, much less a guy who is 37, 38, 39 years old.
Well, and I think for the Braves, I mean, they had a real decision to make on Charlie.
Yeah.
I mean, they had a team option for $20 million. And there was even some reporting, I believe, like in the day before the option deadline, that the Braves were going to decline the option.
Wasn't it? I think it was your guy, Jeff Passan.
It might have been.
I think he like reported it wrong or wrote it wrong. Like, it was literally like a rare miss. I'm pretty sure Passan literally like wrote it wrong.
And that sounds right. Yeah.
Like it was a weird situation. So that does tell you that at some point along the way, someone told Jeff Passan that they weren't going to pick it up. So even as the biggest Morton guy on the podcast, that was not a no brainer. $20 million is for 1 year is fine for Morton. Last year, by the way, according to Fangraphs, he was worth $21.6 million. So that's essentially a neutral value on that contract. That's nice. And it also comes with the not having to give him a long-term contract, because that's the other thing. Like, people forget, this is not new territory, but if you don't have to give around a long-term deal with downside, you usually have to pay a little bit more in short-term. And 1 year of $20 million for a guy who's your third starter, or maybe even the fourth starter this year, it's a lot of money, but it's a one-year contract, and he was worth it last year. But you're right. It was not a no-brainer at all.
And let's hope that that's a sign that, I mean, his medicals are strong, I would imagine. I mean, we're not doctors, but I would imagine physically he's in pretty good shape. I mean, really, for the last decade, Charlie has been able to avoid serious injury. I mean, he put together a lot of innings with Houston and then Tampa Bay and then, of course, coming to Atlanta. So,
but he broke his leg in the World Series because he got a ball smashed off of his leg. That's being injury prone.
Just a baller move. And then he struck out a couple of batters after that and pitched another inning.
Yeah, what the heck? That's so, actually, I mean, one of those things, not to go into full-on Charlie Braves territory, but he stayed in the game. He stayed in the game.
On a broken, was it his fibula? I believe that
he broke his leg. He fractured his leg and pitched on it.
Yeah, Such a badass dude.
Legendary.
Yeah, Charlie Morton, let's hope. Another good season in the tank. The Braves do not need him to be a Cy Young candidate or even even an all-star. But if he can give them 180 innings of good third, fourth level starter production behind Fried and Strider and hopefully a healthy Chris Sale, I mean, they're going to be in good shape if that's the case.
If he is the guy he was even 2 years ago, so last year he was better than he was in 2022 by the numbers. Even if he is the guy from 2022 who had an ERA in the low fours and threw 31 starts, that is perfectly fine for what they need him to do. You know what I mean? And he was better than that last year. I'm purposely picking out his worst season in the last 7 years. So yeah, Charlie's worst season in the last 7 years was 2 years ago. Even if he is the same guy he was 2 years ago, I would take that.
Yeah, I would too. And that was the season with the fluky home run thing.
Yeah, which
I really don't think that's what it was.
Right. I'm with you 100%. But again, even if you just said, okay, you can copy paste his year from 2022, 31 starts, 172 innings, ERA like 4.3, FIP of 4.1. He was worth about two wins. That's a quality fourth starter. It's not anything more than that. It's not sexy, but those innings are valuable on a team that just has to get to the postseason.
Yeah. You're not going to have five aces as much as we would love it. And yes, if Charlie can be anywhere close, even just kind of a blend of the past two seasons.
Yes.
I think the Braves would take all day long. And you know, you just need that stability, especially in the back of your rotation. Teams, I mean, the Braves have tried not to have a revolving door at the back of the rotation the last couple of years, and they haven't been able to do it. I mean, they called on, I think, 16 different starting pitchers last season for a variety of mainly injuries, but a variety of reasons. Now, let's hope that they're able to get a little more stability this year and they're not having to really push the limits of their depth, especially down in Gwinnett.
Yeah, good call there. And that's a good point of transition to the rest of the rotation. So those four guys we already talked about are written in pen unless they're injured. Basically, it would take a long time of Sale or Morton being bad for them to be in any danger of not being in the rotation. Injury is the only thing there. I guess it could happen if they were bad for long enough. But anyway, the fifth starter spot is, as of this moment, on March 10th, up for grabs. We talked about it a lot when they acquired / paid Ronaldo Lopez. The Braves were pretty aggressive in messaging through the beat writers that they were going to have him stretched out as a potential starter. And it seems like that messaging continues now. In short, we'll come back to this later. He's been excellent as a reliever in his career, including recently, and not as good as a starter, but he's been really good in recent days as a reliever. But the age-old thing is, if you have a guy who can start and pitch well, that is more valuable that even if he is better on a per inning basis as a reliever, you would rather have that guy start if he's capable of starting and pitching at a high level. And right now, everybody that's down in Florida still is talking about Ronaldo starting. And if he's starting, he seems like the logical or maybe even the favorite to be the fifth starter, which, spoiler alert, that means Bryce Elder wouldn't be. And Bryce Elder was an all-star last year. So, granted, I'm using all-star in gigantic quotes, but he actually was an all-star. So what do you make of this whole thing? I mean, it's not like a 1v1. They're probably going to need both of these guys along the way, but we're halfway through spring, and it seems for all the world like Lopez is the favorite to be the starter.
I'm a little surprised, to be honest. Whenever the Braves went out and signed Lopez in early November, I mean, they were aggressive on him, as you said. You know, immediately my first thought, I think we talked about it on the podcast, was it was just some lip service from the front office in order to put themselves in a better place to negotiate with other free agent starting pitchers, and that Lopez would ultimately find himself in the bullpen. And he may find himself in the bullpen at some point this year. I actually think Lopez will be in the bullpen come, I don't know, some point in the summer. But they really do seem serious and set on giving him a chance to start. And when we say start, and Brad, this was something I wanted to bring up. I personally don't see Lopez as a traditional starter going five or six innings and throwing 90 to 100 pitches. I kind of see him being in like a glorified opener type or a shortened starter type, where maybe he throws three or four innings, maybe 60, 70 pitches. because he's never been like a full-on starter. I mean, it's been 5 years since he's thrown more than 70 innings in a season.
Yeah. But
I kind of envision him in, quite honestly, the role I thought they were going to have Colin McHugh in, where he was like a hybrid starter reliever. And that never really happened with McHugh, but I'm kind of thinking they're setting themselves up to have Lopez start the season in the rotation, but then after a little while, start to transition back into the bullpen.
They could do that. I genuinely don't know. And I've been trying to get some more intel behind the scenes from people. I have been sending some messages and making some calls on this, cause like, I would like to get a better feel for it. I still don't really know. You mentioned like he's only been a starter in a full-time capacity in two full seasons. He was a 180 inning starter back-to-back years in with the White Sox in 2018, 2019. He wasn't any great shakes. So he was fine. He was a starting caliber player. Not great. And then after that, he's basically been awesome as a reliever, which is part of the thing here. Like, he signed, you know, three years, $30 million. It was like a pretty expensive reliever contract, but also he's been a top 20 reliever in baseball the last 2 years. Like, he's been really, really good as a reliever. But I mean, I feel like they're going to give him a chance. Like, from what I can gather, it seems like they're serious. They message it as being serious in that fashion. You never know what they told him, but I would bet you that part of the agreement was that I bet you he wants to start, because most guys want to start if they can. And they seem to be serious about giving him a chance. And look, we'll talk about Bryce Elder in a second. I think Lopez, by the way, has looked good. It's three outings in the spring, but he's looked good so far. I don't want to overrate that, but it is a data point. And I think he just might be better than Bryce Elder. So if you, maybe in the playoffs, you get to the point where you're talking like, if they have everybody available, which is a giant if, there's a lot of baseball to be played between now and October. He seems like a perfect guy to put back in your bullpen in October. But before then, I think if he's starting and pitching at a reasonable fourth, fifth starter level, I could see them just having him be a starter. I don't think that's necessarily the best idea or the worst idea. I think he would be better in a relief role on a per inning basis. But if they believe he could be like, I don't know, a guy that can throw in the low fours ERA wise as a starter and eat some innings, and like, he's a really good pitcher. So like, I kind of understand what they're doing or what they seem to be doing. But I think people who can listen to this podcast can tell in our voices, we don't really have a lot of clarity here. Like, no. we're kind of guessing.
Yeah, we are certainly guessing. I think with Lopez too, something that we have to keep in mind, and I'm sure the front office is keeping in mind, he has to be on the major league roster, regardless of his role.
I mean, 3 years, $30 million. He's going to be around.
Right. But, you couldn't send him to the minors and because of his veteran status. So he has to be on the roster. And what I'm getting at is that allows you to have another bullpen arm. If Ronaldo is in the starting rotation, it allows you to carry another reliever. If you have Bryce Elder as your fifth starter, you have to have Lopez in the bullpen. So you kind of gain a bullpen spot by at least having him as your fifth starter for however long it lasts.
It's also stretching him out too. I mean, I know you know this, but if you think at some point this year you would like to use him as a starting pitcher, you're better off doing it at the beginning because you have all spring to stretch him out. Because, you know, it's not impossible to stretch a guy out during the season, but it's harder to do that. Like, it's a similar point to the one you're making. If you look up in June and Elder's not getting it done, or you get an injury to Sale or an injury to Morton or whatever, and you're like, hey, we'd like to use Ronaldo, it would take them a few weeks to get him up to speed to be a more than a three-inning guy. You know what I mean? If they want him to throw six innings, he's got to stretch out. And I think they have spent the whole winter and now the whole spring, it seems like, making sure that he's going to be able to throw, I don't know if it's going to be seven innings at a time, but like, I think that by opening day, he will be at a starter-level workload. Or at least the potential for it. And that is easier to do now than it will be later.
Yes, much easier to wind down than wind up in the middle of a season. And I think my overall take on Ronaldo Lopez is this. I don't know what his role is going to be. I'm not sure that anyone really knows what his role is going to be. The Braves might not even know what his role is going to be at this point in the spring. I think, though, that he is going to throw important innings one way or another, whether it's in a traditional starter role, whether it's in an opener role, whether it's in a high impact late inning reliever role. I really don't know. And I'm guessing it's something we're going to learn over the next couple of months as the season begins. But clearly the Braves like Lopez. There was a lot to like with his very live arm. He's a guy who throws upper 90s, had one of the fastest fastballs of anybody in the league last year in a bullpen role. But you're right to, you know, just kind of put a bow on it. He would be significantly more valuable if he's able to start regularly for the Braves, just because starters are more valuable than relievers. So it's going to be fascinating to see. It's really one of the true questions that this roster has is what do the Braves do with Ronaldo Lopez and how does it impact the rotation and the bullpen?
Yep. And we'll move on. But in a perfect, perfect, perfect world, you could start Ronaldo Lopez, throw him 30 starts, and then in October be like, hey, Ronaldo, you remember when you were an awesome reliever? Now you have to do that. And that would work, I think. Again, perfect world. That'd be the way I think that I would draw it up in a vacuum. That's what I would do. Yeah. So
The Braves know, and we will speak it into existence. Yeah. A 30 start season and then a shutdown reliever. But it is valuable having versatility in guys like this. And there's just not a lot of pitchers who have the potential to at least make starts and work out of the bullpen with the kind of velocity that he has.
And that's why they paid him $10 million a year. He's just a good pitcher, which we probably shouldn't say enough. He's a good pitcher, and that's why they signed him to what they did. And whatever role that he is in, I have some faith that he's going to give them some good value, which is very, very helpful. The other guy in the mix, of course, is Bryce Elder. We spent a lot of time Bryce Elder last year during the year. I'm sure we have some new listeners around. He had a good season on the whole last year. That's important to note. If you could just take that full season and just spread it out again and do it again, you'd love that as a fifth starter. He had a 3.81 ERA. You know, his peripherals were a little bit worse than that. Not a lot of strikeouts. Sky-high ground ball rate, etc. He also had the famous tail of two seasons where he was really good early on. He was not performing his peripherals, but he was pitching better early on in basically the first half of the year. And then after that, he was pretty bad from essentially July on. He was pretty bad. So we can get into more detail if you want to, Scott. The ground ball rate fell, strikeout rate fell, walk rate went up. It was all kind of bad, basically, the last 3 months of the year.
Yeah.
I don't know what to make of it. I think we were seen, and probably rightly so, as being skeptical of Elder. And I know I was. I'll speak for myself. I was skeptical. I am skeptical. At the same time, I do think that it's worth noting that fifth starter is not exactly the highest bar to clear. And I think he could probably fill that role in acceptable fashion. It's just that they might just not trust him. And I wouldn't blame them for that.
Yeah. Bryce Elder is fascinating. He, as you said, on the whole, the Braves would take that 10 times out of 10 for their fifth starter production.
Absolutely.
But the issue is that he started out so well and then it just came cratering down. I mean, an ERA of almost 6 in the second half. His peripherals were terrible. His strikeout rate went down. His walk rate went up. The home runs went up. The ground balls went down. I mean, basically everything that a pitcher needs to do to be successful, he did pretty well in the first half, but he did none of that in the second half. Yes. And I almost think if it was flipped the other way, he would have a much better chance of being the fifth starter because then you can tell yourself the tale of, oh, he figured something out. He made an adjustment. He figured out, you know, whatever he needed to work on. But because the numbers were just so poor and then he got blown up in the playoffs as well, I mean, I think those things are kind of working against him. And then whether it's fair or not, you know, Bryce Elder was never a mega prospect. He throws a 90-mile-an-hour fastball. He's not flashy. I think sometimes guys get pigeonholed early in their careers based on their prospect status and the kind of pitcher that they are expected to be. And when you become the pitcher that you were expected to be and just not really do a whole lot of good on the mound, which is kind of what it was the second half of the season, I'm sure that is fresh in the minds of the front office. And it's fair to wonder just who he would be if given another 30 starts this upcoming year.
Yeah, and to that end, you know, the projection systems, your Zips, Steamer types, basically have him projected as what I would describe as a fifth starter. Like, a guy with an ERA in the mid-4s, a one-win pitcher over the course of 29, 30 starts. The thing that's always scared me about Elder is that he doesn't really miss bats. His strikeout rate last year was quite low. Even when he was pitching well, it was not very high. But it worked because he was getting an obscene ground ball rate, and his slider was really cooking. And like when he's got it going, you could definitely see the path. Even without the strikeouts, if you're getting a ground ball rate in the 50% range, you can live. It's just that if you don't have that and you don't miss bats, you get to the point where you're going to get teed off on. So I don't know exactly what I think about what they're going to do. I do think that there will be a stretch this year, even if he's pitching well, in which we're all questioning whether he should be a pitcher in the rotation anymore. You know what I mean? Even if he has, there'll be a 5-start stretch where he has a 7 ERA and looks like a guy who's going to get beat up, and we'll all do this again. I don't mean that to be negative. It's just when you have his stuff and you don't miss bats, like he doesn't miss bats, you're going to have some variance. And I think that he is not a sexy option. It is telling to me that he is not already written in pretty much pen as a starter. Like, I understand this is going to be a weird way to frame it, but I mean, I'm not joking when I say he was literally selected as an all-star last year. And if you have a guy who was an all-star last year who never got hurt and he's not even in the rotation for his same team the next season, that's wild. Like, how often do you see that? That doesn't really happen. And granted, we at the time, and I feel like I'm being mean and I'm not, at the time, we all kind of knew that was not real. Like, he was not an all-star level pitcher. But he had the numbers. The ERA was really low at that point in time, and he earned the nod. Like, all-star selections are for what you do that year, and he pitched to the level of that until the all-star voting basically happened, and then it was over after that. So I just don't know what to make of it, but I know this is a weird situation because a guy who did what he did last year, even on a really good team like the Braves, usually is kind of locked into a rotation spot the next year, and he's not.
You know, and this just popped in my head. I wonder if we're almost now overthinking this. If the Braves feel that Elder is not ready to pitch every fifth day in the majors, and who knows what Alex Anthopoulos thinks in his heart of hearts. He can say something to the media, but we don't know what's in his mind. I'm really curious to know if the having options in the minor league thing is working against Bryce, because they know that they have a fairly sure thing with Ronaldo Lopez. Maybe he's not a traditional starter, but they know they can give him the ball every fifth day and he can go out there and throw 4 or 5 innings. You know, maybe Elder, just because he has those minor league options, similar to some of the other relievers in the bullpen who were sent down. I mean, is that working against him? It might be.
Oh, I think absolutely. I don't want to simplify it too much, but doesn't that make logical sense? I mean, if you just remove the all-star thing and all that stuff and just say, as a pitcher in March of 2024, I think Lopez is better, number one. And the fact that Lopez is making $10 million a year on a freshly signed contract, and Bryce Elder has minor league options, like, yeah, I mean, you'd be foolish to think that wouldn't be at least part of your thought process. Because if, provided what we just talked about, and they want to give Lopez a chance to start, you can do that while also having Bryce Elder pitching Gwinnett every fifth day to stay ready to go.
Have him ready at a moment's notice. Right?
And he doesn't really play up as a bullpen arm either. That's the thing about Bryce, is that his stuff, I think he might be a fine reliever if they put him in that role, but it's not like he projects as a guy that's like, oh man, put him in the bullpen and like he'll light you on fire kind of guy. Like, that's not what his arsenal looks like. So all that's thrown into a mix, like, yeah, it does make completely logical sense to me if they're committed to Lopez as a starter, to just put Bryce in Gwinnett. And that sucks for Bryce. Like, he's probably too good. Even for as skeptical as I have been about him, if he had pitched the way he did last year on 20 teams or 25 teams in the league, he would be locked into a spot in the rotation. It's just the Braves are really good and they have high aspirations, and they just signed Ronaldo Lopez and Chris Sale. Like, what are you going to do?
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's the both the beauty and the curse of being the Atlanta Braves, where you won 104 games and could very well win 104 games again.
If he's on the Pirates, he's like their third starter.
Oh, you know what I mean? Yeah.
That's just me saying a random thing, but like, there are so many teams that would like to have Bryce Elder, like really like to have Bryce Elder. Even if you don't love him, he would be so much better than a lot of teams' fourth, fifth starters.
Yeah. It's not always really fair, right?
No, it's not.
It is not always fair. I am confident in saying that at some point this upcoming season, Bryce Elder is going to throw a significant number of innings for the Atlanta Braves. It may just not be in April, and that's probably okay. I mean, I think they're going to have to really evaluate and make the most of their 26 roster spots and the 13 pitcher spots. And maybe that doesn't include Bryce Elder on opening day or even for the first month or two or even three of the season. But at some point, it feels inevitable to me that he's going to be called upon, because the likelihood of getting 30 healthy starts from Spencer Strider and Max Fried and Charlie Morton and Chris Sale is very low.
And Ronaldo Lopez.
And Ronaldo Lopez and whoever else that they're going to call on at some point. So I think Bryce has a role, to be sure. We don't want to sound like we're picking on him, because he did everything the Braves asked him to do last year.
That's right.
And he threw a ton of very good and important innings early in the season when the rotation was in dire straits. And, you know, in some ways, it's not his fault that he might get crunched off the opening day roster just because of the depth that's around him in the rotation.
Yes. And that's a good point to kind of pivot to the rest of the guys who are in the mix here. And just to throw a stat out there, last year, 16 guys made a start for the Braves. Now, three of them were openers, basically, but 13 of the 16 were actual starters. I'm going to just say some names now of guys who started last year for the Braves in actual starting roles. Kyle Wright, unfortunately for Scott, Michael Soroka, Yanni Chirinos, Jared Schuster, and Colby Allard. They're all gone from last year. And that's five guys who threw actual non-opener starts for the Braves last year, and they're not on the team anymore. So to your point you just made, they're going to need guys. Like, guys are going to throw pitches, are going to throw that we haven't. I'll say this to you, Scott. Someone we have no idea who it is going to pitch in a starting role for the Braves this year. Whether it's going to be a reliever that's not on the guy, or maybe not a reliever, a minor league guy, or they sign someone off the scrap heap or whatever. Someone that's not on this projection that we're about to talk about will throw a game for the Braves this year.
Yeah, I would agree. And they do have a lot of depth here. You mentioned all of the outgoing names. They almost had to say goodbye to some of these outgoing names because there just wasn't enough room in Gwinnett, let alone Atlanta. Alan Winans, Darius Vines, Dylan Dodd, AJ Smith-Shawver's having a tremendous spring based on everything we've heard from the beat writers. Hurston Waldrop is coming at some point. Waskari Noah is around. Ian Anderson is coming back from Tommy John surgery. So there's still a ton of depth kind of waiting in the barn here for the Braves. And it is a near certainty that they're going to have to tap into these guys at some point this season. It would be a miracle if the Braves got 30 healthy starts from their big four, and B, if they did somehow get 30 healthy starts from all four of those guys, they're going to win like 110 games and it wouldn't matter. But that seems unlikely, and it's a good thing to have this kind of depth.
Yeah. So you just named seven guys in addition to the six we've already talked about. So there's the big four, there's Lopez, there's Elder. That's six. Smith-Shawver, 7. Winans, Dodd, Vines, that's 10. Waldrop is 11. Enoa, 12. Anderson, 13. That is 13 exactly, which is the amount of guys who pitched last year in a starting role for the Braves. And on that list was Yanni Chirinos, who was not on the radar at all when we did our preview last year. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, that's one guy.
Signed him, and it seems likely that at some point, whether at the trade deadline or through a DFA of another team, the Braves will add somebody externally.
Somebody else.
At some
exactly.
Point. Yeah.
I mean, that's just what happens. And it doesn't mean that guy's going to help you a ton. Occasionally they do, and occasionally they don't. It is what it is. But they have the high upside guys. Smith-Shawver and Waldrop are the everybody's excited about. Their top two prospects, and with good reason. By the way, Smith-Shawver last year threw 25 innings on a 104 win team at the age of 20. That's actually wild.
And he looks tremendous this spring. And anybody around camp, I know Mark Bowman every year does his like most improved player around the team. I would be surprised if it's not AJ Smith-Shawver, because he has drawn rave reviews. He struck out Aaron Judge twice on Sunday. Aaron Judge, maybe when healthy, the best hitter on planet Earth, struck him out twice on 7 pitches. I mean, that's something that only so many people can do. And of course, we're not going to blow a start on March 10th in the spring out of proportion. But I mean, he really seems like he has taken that next step.
Yeah, they had the combination of the two guys, again, Smith-Shawver and Waldrop, who are the long-term high upside they have the more like org depth guy, not to be negative, but, you know, Winans-Dodd and Vines are kind of like the, you know, depth AAA guys right now. And then they have the injured guys who have been there before in Anderson and Enoa, who are questions. You know, Enoa, people like, but he had a little bit of elbow soreness already this spring, TBD on that. Anderson's not back yet, but like they're at least around. They're on the radar and they have good depth, but you can never have too much pitching depth. We've said it. It's a cliche, but it's true. You can't have too much pitching depth. So the Braves know that. They like to have, Alex has said this, they like to have 10 guys at least that can throw a start in April if they need to. And they really seem to have 11. And that's if you don't count Enoa and Anderson for injury reasons. They already have 11 guys, it seems like. They would, maybe not Waldrip in April, but yeah. 10, I guess, if you take him off the list.
And in small samples, but I liked what we saw from Allen Winans and Darius Vines.
Those guys are similar to Elder, like not as good as Elder, but they would be more in the mix a lot of other places, like right
on
now
a bad
today.
Team. Yeah. Yeah. To pick on the Pittsburgh Pirates, like would Allen Winans be their number five? I don't know. Maybe I'm not overly versed with the Pirates starting rotation, but I mean, pick a bad team, the Colorado Rockies, who are a dumpster fire. Would Darius Vines be on the big league roster for the Colorado Rockies? Maybe. I mean, he might be.
I mean, Allen Winans, again, it's Zips projections. It's a projection system, but he's projected if he had a more reasonable workload to be decent, like low fours ERA, like 1.5 wins in 120 innings. That's a pretty good fifth starter. Like that's what he's projected to do. That's just one guy, but, and he's 28 years old. Like he's not sexy. We all know this, but like, that's a good example of a guy who like, man, if I was Allen Winans' agent, I'd be like, God, get me out of here. get him out of Atlanta right now, if possible. Get me to a team I can pitch on.
Yeah. And again, that's just kind of an abundance of riches for the Braves to have very capable waiting in the wings guys like Winans and Vines. I'm curious to see what they do with Smith Shauver and Hurston Waldrop this upcoming season. I would love for them to get 3-4 months of pitching every fifth day in Gwinnett. I think that could do wonders for the
development.
Oh,
that's going to happen. I mean, I think that Smith Shauver might be the next guy up in the rotation in Atlanta if something happened to two of the guys. I think it's Elder right away. You know, like if, going back to what we just talked about, if Elder's the sixth starter, Smith Shauver's the seventh starter, I think.
Yeah, I would agree. The only thing I don't want the Braves to do, and I think they learned from their mistakes a couple of years ago, was the back and forth constantly with Kyle Wright, for example. He would go to the majors and sit in the bullpen for a week, and then they would send him down to Gwinnett, and he would make two starts. And then they would call him up, and he would make a spot start for the Braves, and then he would sit in the bullpen for 2 weeks, and then they would send him back to Gwinnett.
and you were so mad about it every time.
Nobody is benefiting from that other than the emergency need to start a game that night or the potential of needing a long man in the bullpen should the game go 15 innings, which doesn't happen anymore. I just want them to be in a consistent environment and allow them to develop. But you're right. I agree completely that Bryce Elder is very likely fifth or sixth in the pecking order for the rotation. And then Smith Shauver would be the next guy up, especially if what we've seen this spring proves to be true and he has taken that next step in development.
Yeah, we wholeheartedly agree there. He's a starter, use him as a starter. He's the kind of guy, as is Waldrop, where like in October they could be useful in a bullpen, but you don't think about that until September. You know what I mean? Like you don't need to think about that. They should be starting every fifth day, like you just laid out. So
yeah,
we are
figure it out. Yeah, you figure it out when rosters expand and you have to figure out your playoff roster.
We are in agreement. And knock on wood that they need a playoff roster, of course, but we feel pretty good about that. Scott, just to put a bow on it all, Fangraphs projects the Braves as the third best rotation in baseball right now, behind only the Dodgers and the Phillies. That's not really a negative take. It's pretty in line with what I kind of think about the rotation. And as a reminder, like this is one of the areas that people were worried about on this team, and they're projected to be third in baseball. So pretty good, I guess. I mean, if anything happened to Strider, that might not be great. But other than that, like there isn't a lot of disaster potential because of the aforementioned depth. They have a combination of talent, proven talent, upside, depth, all that stuff that you want.
Or, yeah. There is some risk here. And anytime, 40-year-old pitchers, not very common. Chris Sale has had more injuries in 5 years than most guys have in their entire careers.
Yep.
Max Fried does not always have the cleanest bill of health. Spencer Strider is human like all of us, right? We could go on and on. But every team in baseball has similar concerns. And you mentioned the Dodgers and the Phillies, especially Los Angeles. They have a ton of variance with injuries in the rotation, with Tyler Glass now, Walker Buehler coming back from Tommy John. I mean, they have some real questions. And then Philly, you know, I don't think the Phillies have the ceiling necessarily that the Braves and the Dodgers have if a lot of things go right. But the Phillies probably have the safest floor just with the durability that Wheeler and Nola and Suarez and Walker have. So very naturally, these are probably the three best teams in the National League, which sounds about right. And it should be a really fun season just as we wrap up the player position previews. I mean, just a phenomenal roster, 1 through 26. There is talent, there is upside, there is floor, there is depth. I mean, there's really just, for my money, no glaring hole or weakness on this team. And we are very much in the golden days with the Atlanta Braves, and let's hope for a good season and maybe a little better postseason luck come October.
Yeah, we are in agreement on that as well. And yeah, like you just said, we wrapped up our position previews. We will have one more like formal season preview in capital letters episode to do our predictions at the end of the spring, sometime closer to opening day. Might have another show between those things. Like, there's still stuff that we're going to be doing in between now and opening day. Plus, Sean is always busy on this podcast network with Daily Hammer, as are Steven and Chris. So there's plenty of content coming. I have lots and lots of basketball responsibilities starting basically this week until the end of the Final Four. So I am slightly buried, but I will be here between, I don't know exactly when we're going to do podcasts between the two of us because tis the season, but we will pledge to get fresh content in your ears between now and opening day. Scott, what else is going on in your world? Where can people find you on Twitter and things, and what's going on?
Yep, I am at ScottColeman55 on Twitter. Be sure to check out batterypower.com. Lots of good content there as we kind of hit the home stretch of the spring. Let's hope for a fairly quiet and healthy next couple of weeks for the Braves. And as Brad said, we will be back at some point soon here. Getting closer and closer to opening day is always really exciting. We will do the aforementioned March Madness bonus segment of the pod as well next week at some time. We are both college basketball fanatics, and should be a lot of fun. Brad, great doing these with you, and I'm sure we'll talk soon.
We will, and typically, as we always do, we went super long on this one. That's par for the course, but please, as I said before on the show, subscribe to the podcast. Do us that favor and auto-download the show if you wouldn't mind. Ratings and reviews appreciated at the highest levels. And also, please read batterypower.com. Chris and Ivan and the team do a fantastic job, both with writing and editing and curating. And there's just always something fresh on the website. And read all of that stuff. Even I don't really write that much anymore, but Scott does, and Chris does, and Steven does, and everybody that you know and love is on that website as well. So thank you for listening, as always, and we'll see you next time. But please subscribe. Enjoy the rest of your time. It's March. Have fun, and opening day is looming.